Blog Talk Radio.
We don't need it twice, do we, gentlemen? And good evening. It's 6 p.m. on Sunday. This is the Sunday show on Here Be Monsters Radio. We're going to zap you some Sunday and the week's events. And we're proud and glad to have our oftentimes co-host, the progressive professor, Ronald Feynman, with us. And Wayne Johnson is here, co-host Wayne Johnson. Is here and want to send out all our very best energy and prayers for healing to our good buddy who's been with me since the beginning and will be back as soon as he's feeling better. Jack Jodell up there in Minneapolis. Jack, I know you're listening sometime this week. Miss you and love you and sending all the best as I know the guys are. And it's been another hell of a week at sea here in the USA, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Every week is bigger than the one before as far as shocking news, yes.
I was going to say, it's just a never-ending story.
Certainly history is being made, I guess you could say. Not necessarily good history, but history is being made.
Well, if you consider the spin today on the presidential announcement of the ISIS head being eliminated, it was shocking to me to hear him say, because really our special steel squads and special forces are really very good. I think the only thing, there's two other groups that compete with them, and that would be firstly the Mossad and secondly the SAS. But they really do know what they're doing when they're given the opportunity with counterintelligence and all of that to go in and do a job that nobody really who has a good heart feels about. But I do have to say that when President Obama announced that bin Laden had been, taken, as they say.
Assuming ambient temperature.
I felt, well, okay, there's that. Today, though, it didn't escape anybody's notice that stupid son of a bitch stood there and said that he thanked Russia first and then Turkey, which we had to fly through their zones without their permission. And Russia is bitching about it already. He made a little half farthing mention of the Kurds who provided most of the intel that was there for us to make this raid. So I'm like, and then he goes on speaking like, you know, a rolling movie Ola and adding his own little tweaks. Like, how the F would he know that he went scurrying off, even with a drone following him, that he was whimpering and crying? And, you know, it's unfortunate that the man took children with him, of course, but decent people hear this and they wonder what the, you know, I mean, don't you think the majority of America is going, well, that's a relief. However, what the hell, you know, it didn't come off like American diplomacy.
Well, he doesn't believe in American diplomacy. The point is that he went ahead and he withdrew our forces from Syria, having them go to Iraq. And apparently, from what I've read today, apparently that held up the mission to get, you know, to get, you know, to get the ISIS leader. That apparently it delayed it because he complicated it by his timing of getting out of Syria when the intelligence community was trying to go in earlier and they couldn't because of what he did. And then he didn't notify Nancy Pelosi or the Democratic leaders, which is automatic. That, you know, certainly Obama did that with the Republican leaders. So he also, you know, did not do that. And he's already starting to make it out like Obama shouldn't have claimed much credit, but he's taking so much credit for this one. So it's just so infuriating.
Well, yeah, that's a joke, isn't it?
It's stunning. It's stunning. But the reason that you informed the Gang of Eight, and they don't get things like that out. In fact, he said Washington leaks. Well, the only place Washington is truly leaking is at the White House, if I recall correctly, through the last couple of years. Most of the crap that's leaked has come from his people. I mean, you know, this is just the truth. And not to inform the Congress of an action like this, I'm sure there were military men in the room that were like, boy, oh, boy, oh, you know, just sort of shaking their heads.
Yeah, also, I heard that the actual mission occurred, I think, our time at 3:30 in the afternoon on, I guess, Saturday. And they have a photograph showing him with his vice president and the other people in the Situation Room about 5:17, I think it is. So they wonder, why is this so? Because apparently he was golfing at 3:30. He was not in the Situation Room. They posed the picture after, unlike with Obama and Hillary and the others in the year 11. They were actually in the Situation Room. So they were lying about that, too, because the picture was taken like almost 2 hours or more, around 2 hours after the event. He was not where he should have been. He shouldn't have been out golfing.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's just so many things. Yes, it's a great accomplishment, but the way he's conducted himself and telling Russia, not telling the Gang of Eight, as you say, the Democrats and the Republican leadership in Congress, and always trying to badmouth Obama, that was no big deal what he did, but he's making it a big deal what he's done. It's stunning. It's really stunning.
Yeah.
Well, he's P.T. Barnum of the presidencies. You know, he's nothing more than P.T. Barnum. Like you said, he wasn't there. The photo op was well after this incident, because if it had gone wrong, they wouldn't have never accomplished that. And that's, you know, that's the kind of thing. He's just like P.T. Barnum, right? And it's always, it's an afterthought. If it was successful, yeah, we were there. Yeah, see this big picture of us, you know, 2 hours later. Beforehand, if it had gone wrong, they didn't know anything about it. They acted on their own. You know, they make up some kind of story.
Well,
and also, even with the picture, it looked staged. While the one with Obama and the others back seemed just to be really what was happening at the moment, the way they looked, their faces and all that. But with the picture today, it just looks like almost like a. It just looks. It does look real. You know what I mean? It's just different.
Yeah. Well, Al Baghdadi, I think is how you pronounce the guy's name. He was the. If you will, they actually call him, and, you know, I've got a whole community behind me that's going to sort of squeam at this, but the spiritual and the leader of the ISIS or ISIL movement. And it's really what the name of it is, the Islamic State. And that's what they call themselves. And that's what their flag, their colors are when they fly them. And, these are some of the most, but you know, you were telling me, Ron, you had made a comparative article this week over at the History Channel.
History Channel, History News Network. I have my own blog there now. I've done like 127 articles, so they finally gave me a blog. So if you go on historynewsnetwork.org, look under blogs, I'm listed by Ronald L. Fineman, and this is the most recent article. If you want, I'll go over it. You want me to do that?
Well, I was trying to make a comparison here.
Well, not on this particular issue with the obvious, this is something new. But I do have a lot of comparisons that I could go into if you wish.
Well, what I was going to say is that the comparison between not Obama and Trump and how they handled things, but the complete patriarchy and autocracy and monotheistic kind of testosterone overload that is demonstrative of both Trump and his best pals in leadership in the globe, and al-Baghdadi are just so similar, I think, that it's like the pot calling the kettle black when he calls this guy evil. He's not seeing the mirror image there, you know?
Well, he's always projecting. Everything he projects is himself.
Yeah. It really is. And it was so, you know, the other thing that we must discuss between us, we absolutely must. We must take note of how we lost such a wonderful man, a wonderful leader this past week with Cummings Crossing. Elijah Cummings crossed over in Baltimore this week. And wasn't it a pleasure to listen to President Clinton, President Obama, Secretary Clinton, and the Speaker of the House talk? Because, first of all, they got more than three word sentences out. And they renewed your faith in what leadership in this country is, you know? And of course, Elijah Cummings, who, you know, I always have liked him. I've always, you know, as much as he's in the news, but you know, one of the biggest things in his his form of legislation and leadership in the Congress, biggest thing on his plate was kindness. Kindness. He stood up and roared when he needed to, but he was kind. He was a kind man, and it's just so hard to lose someone like that.
No, Tay, kindness is not very common in politics anymore. It's really a horrible thing. People are not kind to each other either. There's so much more anger out there, and people are rude to each other, and I never have liked that. That's not the kind of person I am. I don't like to act that way, and I don't like others acting that way.
Yeah. If I may interject here.
Yeah.
Being from Maryland, we cherished Elijah, the congressman. It was a big loss for all of us here in Maryland. He was up front on the front line of the civil rights movements. He's had his head split open. He was arrested. He had been beaten while being arrested and thrown in jail. But he kept, like Dr. King's aspect, kept moving forward with peace, dignity, and just every time they knocked him down, he stood up and said, "No, this is not right. I am here to tell you and hold you to morally accountable that what you're doing in the civil rights movement, being against it, is not right. It's not going to stand." That was this man.
Yes. Yes, it was. And you know what? Forgive me, Wayne. He was one of your congresspeople. I should have deflected.
That's correct.
You.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, we all felt the loss here. I don't care, you know, yellow, black or white.
The country.
We knew that he was an outstanding man. He was a great congressman and a great representative for our state.
I think the country felt the loss. I really do, because when you see the great gap, the great divide, it really is. And Ron, you can beat me for this one, but it really is the evil empire against the rebel forces right now, you know?
Well, I would tend to agree. I mean, this man is really, I'm talking about the president, is really an evil person. And in fact, I wrote a entry this week on the Progressive Professor called "Donald Trump, the Miserable and Wretched Human Being," very unpresidential. So if you want, I could even tell you some about that if you wish.
For sure.
I'd like to hear it.
Yeah.
Want me to go ahead?
Yeah.
Okay. This was October 26th, which is yesterday, actually. Yeah. President Donald Trump. It's yesterday, actually. President Donald Trump is demonstrating, this is before, of course, when we knew what happened today. President Donald Trump is demonstrating every day his true character. A self-centered, selfish person who only thinks and cares about himself. Has no compassion, empathy, concern about the plight of others, worships money above all, lies incessantly, is totally ignorant of all fields of knowledge while claiming to be an expert on all, constantly portrays himself as a victim despite the fact that he was born to wealth and has never known what it is to struggle in life, spends much of his working time insulting others with all kinds of names, including his few Republican critics being called human scum this week, including Mitt Romney, he called human scum, gives not any concern to the harm he has done to millions of Americans and also people from other nations by his utterances and actions, and sees others as dispensable when they're no longer useful to his greed and ambitions. Donald Trump is the most unpresidential president we have ever had, far surpassing even Andrew Johnson, Richard Nixon, and Andrew Jackson in that regard. He is not someone any sane person would truly want as a friend. He's a miserable human being who will be reviled in history by all sensible people. That's my article.
That's pretty accurate. I mean, the majority of
people. Professor, tell us how you really feel.
What's that?
I said,
well,
Professor,
I wear my heart on my sleeve.
Really
what
feel.
Can I say?
it's difficult. It's really difficult to it's difficult not to turn on the news, and when he's talking, I have to mute the television.
Well, I find when I'm watching, I get angry, which I try not to, and sometimes they use language I never used in my life. But I'm using, I call four-letter words at the TV screen, and I've joked with people that if the TV screen's recording everything I say and they report it to somebody, they're going to say, boy, this guy Feynman is a really crude guy.
Well, you know,
well, I hold you very dear, Professor, and you know that.
I can't help it. I find that I just, even with George W. Bush, I didn't like him, but I never was angry the way it is. I mean, I think a lot of people have felt their blood pressure go up. It's just, he's worse than anybody. I mean, the others have their faults, but they still are human beings at least, you know. It's, I don't know. It's just, the man is just beyond belief.
You know, the guy got on and he talked about our Baghdadi today and everything, and completely flew it under the news with the fact that there is a manhunt underway right now in Texas. A gunman opened fire at a Halloween party close to Texas A&M University.
Yeah, I heard that.
Two people dead and 14 injured. I mean, this is just some of the stuff that goes on in this country, and it's close to 200,000 Northern California residents are left in the dark with a third power shutdown this month because of the winds, their historic winds. Now, I've lived in California, and Santa Ana winds are hot. And they're you just don't know which way they're going to blow, but they're calling these historic winds. And it's in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I have lots of clients and customers and a couple of shops I work with and people I know and love out there. One of our good friends on Facebook, Maureen Barnado, lives in Marin County, and they're facing these horrific wildfires. The only sanity about it is to realize that once these fires do their damage, the new growth will come up and perhaps some of the poisons in the soil have been, you know, consumed. Did you know that a Samsung space satellite fell from the sky in a Michigan neighborhood this week?
No, I hadn't heard that one.
No, I hadn't heard that. Oh.
It did. And surgeons in Boston this week performed the first full face transplant on an African American.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean that, you know, there's been cases where people've lost their lives because it was impossible to accomplish after certain events, accidents or animal, you know, bites,
yeah.
I
thought that had happened once before. Where basically a chimpanzee had ripped the face off of a woman. She was owned by another woman. They were both friends. And anyway, somehow the ape went angered the ape, and he tore into her and actually ripped her face off, and they had to transplant it then. But I don't know if that was a full face transplant. Maybe it was only half.
Yeah, that's
it. It was
a
very
horrible
vicious
thing.
Attack by the chimpanzee.
We should also
chimpanzee
remember,
would be so dangerous. I never thought of that, you know.
Oh, they can
yeah.
be.
Well,
yeah,
well, they're very strong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's something we should take note of on the show this week too. It's been a full year since the Tree of Life massacre, and the U.S. Jewish communities are still facing significant threats from white supremacy in this country.
And absolutely, it's yes, it's now. Real danger.
Yeah. of course, I'm catching all this off my Apple News, you know, what you missed this week.
There's so much news, and you know, as we go about our lives, even someone like me that pays attention, we can't catch everything that happens. There's just too much going on. And for the White House, every day is something more shocking or disturbing. So it never
well,
ends.
There's,
you know, it's,
there's
keep
really
up, you
no
know?
There's really no news from the White House. He goes out, he talks to a bunch of reporters, lies his ass off with the helicopter or chopper wings behind him. So that he can, and he actually calls people names and doesn't answer their questions. I mean, Jesus H. But tonight is one of the World Series cut down games in D.C., and he is going to be attending the game, but he's not throwing out the first pitch. You know who's throwing out the first pitch? It's going to be the chef that refused to work for him in his D.C. hotel and called him all kinds of names. I forget the guy's name. He's
there
getting
you go.
A first pitch. And
I'd be curious to see if the audience boos him when they realize he's there. I bet they will in D.C.
You know, that's what the spin has been. I caught that on MSNBC, and I'm wondering how the community is going to receive him. It would be
especially after what happened this morning. It's a little awkward, you know, the timing.
Yeah, it's really strange.
To boo someone who just had a rescue mission that worked. I mean, as far as getting rid of someone, as even if you don't like him, it's going to be very, very difficult, I think, for the crowd.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it kills me too that every one of the Democrats that were on any kind of Sunday news today explained that impeachment is proceeding. There's every reason to, because of
course.
This al-Baghdadi affair doesn't change a damn thing. His not discuss or announcing or letting the Gang of Eight know is another form of his disregard for how the country operates and
yes.
the sanctity of the three branches of government that absolutely command this country, not just the White House. But, you know, Trey Gowdy is going to be defending, you know, Trump. So here's a guy who spent millions of dollars chasing Clinton ass for how long about Benghazi, only to
which
find out that there was nothing, just completely hammering down. And this is the guy they chose to come in and speak for. He's not even a part of the government anymore. He's gotten himself a lobbying position, of course. Of course. You know, Elizabeth Warren is correct. If you run for office in this country and serve the country, you should be barred from lobbying other legislators after you retire. Or like
yeah, I think her suggestion is for 5 years you should not be able to do that, but that's not the law. I think it's 1 year or maybe no years. I'm not even sure. It may be 1 year, but I do think she's right on that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's just too much, you know? It's just too much. And now we hear that Biden is taking corporate PAC money. He's decided that that's what he's going to do. But I noticed something happening. I don't know if you guys were watching. Wade, did you watch, Ron, did you watch the Cummings funeral on television?
The what one?
Well, he was there at the funeral. He didn't speak, though, I believe, right?
Well, what happened was this really a couple of things happened. Biden and Obama were there. They sat very far apart, and Obama never even approached Biden during the whole thing. And they were
really
showing people coming and going and stuff. And there was no film or footage of Biden and Obama together, which usually the cameras go for because they're such great buddies. Other thing, they sat very far apart, and Obama could have been, it was his grief, but he looked very disgruntled during his whole stay in that in the church there. And then on the side where all the legislators were, it was a whole bunch of course, the top row of the Democrats, but also a couple of Republicans, including Mitch McConnell. And one of the black legislators came down the line shaking hands and giving a hug to every one of them. And Schiff was standing next to, or Schumer was standing next to McConnell. And he came down, he shook everybody's hand, he shook Schumer's hand, and then he just walked right by McConnell.
Yeah, that
McConnell
I saw.
Took his. And if you take a close look at it, you can see Schumer laughing at McConnell. It's like, whoa.
McConnell is a disgrace. He and Giuliani, so many of them, and Lindsey Graham, oh, my God, these people are just
Mike Pompeo.
No shame.
Now, Lindsey Graham seemed to be in on the El Baghdadi. What was he, playing golf with the president today, that he knew that was going down, or yesterday? I've never liked Lindsey Graham. He's always been, didn't agree with John McCain's politics either, but I didn't disagree with who John McCain was.
I don't think John McCain would be. I think he'd be furious at Graham if he was around now. I think he'd really give it to him, you know.
He and Mitt Romney would be railing. If John McCain were in the Senate today, and you know what? They should have put Cindy McCain in his seat. They really should have. Because she knows, she would have known what she was doing, and she would have never stood for any of this.
I gather she wasn't interested, though. I thought
she did not. She was. She only began to start working again, I think it was a month ago. She has a lot of different charities and functions, and she does have a couple of positions in the community that she keeps in Arizona, but. Yeah, and it's really a pain in the ass if you watch The View to listen to Megan a lot of the time, because first of all, she's a big supporter of Biden's, but second of all, she doesn't drop a bit. She's a petulant little thing that she sounds so uninformed. You know, she just goes on with the Republican conservative, you know.
She's very temperamental
and emotional, yeah. Yeah, and she tries her best. I loved how Rachel Maddow, whose new book, Blowout, is out. She went on The View, and I watched for the first time in a long time because of Maddow being on there. And Maddow just, you know, really with a aplomb, Maddow handled her just like that, very politely, but, you know... It was like the subtext, you don't know what the F you're talking about, lady, you know? And everybody was like, oh, yeah, that's right, that's true. And Megan had to just shut up and sit there. You know, it was like, I like that. But, we've the week ahead, there is something coming up this week. But I got to ask you, Ron, Don't you think it's very, very important that they start making these investigations and interviews public?
Yes, and I think within a couple of weeks they will, because the plan apparently seems to be to, you know, to come up with impeachment resolutions either right before Thanksgiving, which is only a little less than a month, or about a month, or else right after. So I think the trial would take place possibly beginning in December, or maybe have to wait to January, as it did for Bill Clinton. In 1999, but the difference there was Clinton was impeached in the Congress that ended in 98, and then was tried in the new Congress of 99, which actually is illegal. It's supposed to be all in the same Congress. This case is the first year of this Congress, so it can carry over to next year.
Yeah.
Legally.
Okay.
I think that when that begins, and people like Bill Taylor and the ex-ambassador from Ukraine. Excuse me.
Strong testimony, yes.
I think that people are going to sit and listen, and the Republicans may throw as many papers in the air as they wish, but with any kind of, it's like I can remember as a kid watching Sam Ervin question people.
Well, Sam Ervin was one of a kind, yes.
And well, but they put it the gavel in his hand, and you know, they basically allowed him to run the table. And it's that basically he asked the questions that needed to be answered, you know?
Right.
And
yes.
I think that's what the Democrats have to do. They can't have this like what they did with Mueller. It failed completely, even though you and I know that what Mueller was saying and a very important information actually did come out. The Republicans were spinning it like hell. Well, you need someone like a Kamala Harris or and I know it's the Congress, but you need a prosecutorial questioner to get in there to answer or to ask the direct questions for the Democrats in this in an open investigation like that in front of cameras. You know?
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I believe that's very important. Bill Taylor, there's been so many. And now they're saying that John Bolton is going over to testify.
And that could be really dynamite if he does. You know, I don't like the man, but he could really be a major harm to Trump's chances to make it through the term. He could, because Bolton is going to sell it as it is.
Well, he also spins the way he wishes to. Let us not forget the contributions he made to the mistaken insertion of our boys and girls into the Middle East to begin with.
Yes, of course.
Parted. So yeah. I don't trust them as far as I can throw.
No, but
myself.
I think since he's against Trump now, he could be useful. You know, he can be an enemy, but an enemy can sometimes help you against someone else, you know.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yes.
Yes. Getting back to the Mueller investigation, and it was stated when the Congress had Mueller come up and testify, Sheriff said, Trump and his campaign welcomed and encouraged Russian interference in the Democratic election. Mueller was a one-word answer, yes. And then he went on to state, and then Trump and his campaign lied about it to cover it up, yes. Well, the very first one, that is treason. Usually,
yes,
usually
right.
Treason was a death penalty, offense. So, and then when they went to cover it up, well, hell, there's a federal crime within itself that's hindering an investigation. So, you know, he's not only committed treason, but they've also committed a felony by trying to cover up that criminal act of treason. And I guess it's all got to come out here, but these alone, the man should not be making any decisions, making any appointments of our judicial system, anything at all. The man has committed treason. He's committed federal offenses. He should be done and out.
Absolutely. And I must say that there's been some more judicial appointments that have been confirmed for the lower courts, and this is going to be detrimental long term because those people are there for life. We have some people who are not qualified or incompetent, but they're being approved by the Republican Senate, which shows you how important it is that the Senate must go Democratic, you know, to have a majority. It has to. But it's going
to
be a tough...
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's... I saw a sign this last election where my daughter and son-in-law live. It's a very wealthy neighborhood. Its community has their own private beach on the Chesapeake Bay. And the predominant signs in that neighborhood, these are people who are lawyers. They are at the top of their games of doctors, government people. And the predominant campaign signs was, "We need to save our democracy. Vote Democratic. Stop Trump."
Yep. And actually, there's been stories lately about the old argument was the urban areas are Democratic and the suburban areas are Republican. Now it's changing what they call the inner suburbs near the cities, which is, I'm sure, where your daughter lives, are Democratic. The outer suburbs, more in the rural areas, are Republican. So even the suburbs are being divided. Those nearer the city seem to be much more aware and also have much more diversity of people that live in them. So therefore, it is going Democratic. So suburbia is no longer automatically a Republican advantage. And also women, educated women, college-educated women, have definitely turned against, you know, and even college-educated men have in many cases. So that's good signs.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. My daughter is basically, this gated community on the Bay is basically a suburb of Annapolis. And 3 miles away from where my condo on the water here is in downtown Annapolis. But, yes, talking about the educated, college-educated women, that is the largest demographics that this Republican legislators, House leaders, and Republican Senate have been attacking them as a Democratic, you know, their rights. They've gone after. Basically, the women, the educated women, and women in general, need to have their own civil rights. Here we are, umpteen years later, women are still not guaranteed equal pay for equal work.
And of course, the abortion issue is also a major one as well.
Oh yeah, well that's just plain ignorance of whipping up the religious fanatics. But you know, it's like when I had that one-on-one conversation with Jack Kemp, and that was in 2005. And as you know, I was a member of the Republican Party and was doing some positive things, but it wasn't the teabaggers, the Klansmen, the neo-Nazis. You know, hadn't permeated at the time. But they were playing to, Jack Kemp said, they were playing to that demographics. I warned them by embracing this aspect, and particularly the Klansmen, you know, they were going to regret that. You know, you just cannot play with fire. They have the hubris, and not Jack Kemp, but also the Karl Rove and the others, the upper leaders of the Republican Party, thought that they could manipulate them and control them. Quote unquote. This is a quote from Jack Kemp. It says, "There are good demographics to get whipped up at election time." Pause. You know, when you need to whip up the nut jobs. That was what they were thinking about, this demographics that, and now there are good people on both sides. I'm doing air quotes there, quoting Trump. We've had white nationalist fanatics, reactionary aspects, having rallies right in front of the White House of old Klansmen, neo-Nazis, because they have been given validity and welcomed into the Republican Party right in front of the White House because Trump is their man. This is where we have sunk to in this country.
Yes, well put. Very well stated.
Well, the guy is also the great exposure of patriarchy and corruption and just how much money has become the central goal of too many politicians in too many countries. Right now, it's not just America. Look at what's going on in Chile and what's going on in Venezuela. And it's even Italy
has having its problems with this nationalist kind of movement, but it's a great big clash. It's like a chemical reaction you could see in a laboratory of, you know, two the immovable force and the irresistible, you know, object. Somebody has got to, somebody, one side or the other, of course, won't be completely vanquished at all, but one will arrive at the end in triumph, or we're going to be extinct. And that's within the lifetime of Ron, your youngest son. I mean, that's my nephew's lifetime, because there won't be oxygen that will allow him to live a healthy life, let alone the children you see on the street today.
Yes.
They will, when the little girl comes, the little Valkyrie comes by sea and lands on our shores and says to the UN, the house is on fire. She is not understating it one bit. Not
Greta Thunberg
one bit.
Is wonderful, yes.
She is. She's absolutely fantastic little gal. And she's meeting with and working with many on this continent, and there's some consternation about her traveling south of the border because of all of the troubles that could happen if she went into certain countries. But I'm going to tell you what, I'll bet that little Chiquita is going to say, well, you know, that may be, but this is what I'm going to do, because she just does it. She just does it. And women like that. We were talking earlier about Bella Abzug. If you knew anything about Bella, she just did it. Now, I didn't agree with Bella's Zionism, but I agreed with her politics and her character and heart. And she just did it. She stood up and did it. Nothing could stop her. Nothing could stop her. I don't know. Ron, were you ever in her presence? Did you ever hear her speak?
Well, I never met her, but I saw her on television over the years. Yeah, she was always very dynamic and charismatic and very committed, but I never actually had the opportunity to meet her.
I'll tell you, when we were all, it was mostly students. There were a little over 100 students sitting in. We were in, we were like 8 blocks away from the South African embassy, but she was giving a talk to mostly college students. And she said, you know, she began in about apartheid in South Africa and how Mandela belonged out of prison. And a couple of hecklers in the back, you know, screamed, because for some reason, Bella always had hecklers somewhere in the back. But
she's controversial, that's why.
Right. She just made good use of them, really. And she, they said, yeah, it's all fine and well for you to stand there and talk about it, but what the hell are you really doing about it? She said, well, we'll fix that right now. And she climbed down and she said, who is with me? And only about 30 of us left with her and followed her down the street. And by the time we got there, there had to be over 100 with us, because people saw Bella walking and us following, and they said, where are you going? We're going to the South African embassy to protest apartheid. People started joining us. Mounted cop actually billy clubbed me that day, and I got shit canned with Bella Abzug, my first protest where I was ever arrested. And, of course, they in those days, after a couple hours, they released you without even putting anything on your record. Do you remember those days?
Not personally. I never got involved in a demonstration like that.
You were a good boy, huh?
Well, yes. Only now I use foul language when I watch TV and see Trump. I never used to do that in the past. Who believes in foul language?
Well, Glenn, I think you know with my past environmental battles that I'm no stranger to civil disobedience.
Right.
But I've never been arrested. I mean, I've been in politicians' face, you know, telling them, you're not going to do that. You're not going to poison these people because some corporation gave you a $20,000 campaign contribution.
Yeah.
You dig down deep and find your morality. If you can't, I'll be glad to show you where it is.
You know, it's interesting. As I'm hearing what both of you are saying, I guess I come across as the conservative one in this group tonight. In the sense, I never did things like what you two did. So I'm the progressive. I'm not that progressive, I guess.
I can remember that the first thing I ever did as a protest was we all sat in front of Bailey Hall at Cornell, did a sit-in, and we all had to take classes to learn how to go limp when the cops came for us. We all did a sit-in. Freshman year was the last year of the Paris Peace Talks, and we were protesting the war. I actually got to protest the Vietnam War just once, and they did. The cops did come and get us, and there were quite a few of us, and we all got a day suspension, which affected our grades. And the those bastards, they fine you too. I had to pay $150.
Oh boy.
That was serious money back then. Yes.
Yeah, you're damn right. It was a key. Ron doesn't know what we're talking about there, Wayne.
That's all right. That's
I know
okay.
what you're talking about, but I never did anything like that. I never got involved in demonstrations. That just wasn't me when I was that age, you know.
I was less outspoken
than I've become.
Yeah, no, but...
Yeah,
no,
the professor, she was talking about a key, K-E-Y.
Yeah.
They was talking about a little bit of marijuana.
Yeah, little brick.
A kilo of pot is what she was talking about.
Easy to hide.
Yes, I have to admit, I have too many witnesses. I am no Vestal Virgin.
But you know, it's funny, it's strange. The day after, or was it 2 days after this SOB was inaugurated, how many women showed up in D.C.?
Oh, I was very proud. I have a niece who was an English major and also a master's in library sciences. She and many of her other co-teachers went up to D.C. and marched in that aspect, too. I was so proud
of her. Yeah, Million Woman March. Well, I got to tell you, our Parkland kids, and I think Ron and I can say this with some pride because there are kids from our area, even though he's in Palm Beach County. I grew up in Lighthouse Point. Our inland town was Coral Springs and Parkland there.
Yes, it's not far from where I live here, yes.
No.
It's just across
and
the street, yeah.
Those kids have spread out into groups and formed other groups, and they have marshaled the high schoolers of this nation, and there are over 12 million more registered voters because of them. You can imagine who they'll be voting for, and they'll be they will be of voting age in this next election. Now that's 12 million
if they
vote.
That's the only thing. Will they keep the pace up, or will they talk and not do it? That's the only thing we can't be sure of.
I'll lay you money that at least 70% of them do, because of every day there's something new, and because all of this school shooting is keeping up. Yeah, and the shootings are keeping up. I think they will run. I think the time has come.
I hope so. But just you have to wonder. You know, you have to be a little skeptical. Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to just mention it. We don't have to, but if you want me to talk about that Carter article, we're down to about 10 minutes, so should I do that now?
Sure.
Okay, so this is an article that I published a week ago on History News Network called Jimmy Carter's Presidency Contrasts Sharply with Trump's. October 2019 has been a good month for the Carter family. On October 1st, former President Jimmy Carter celebrated his 95th birthday, has lived longer than any previous president. On October 17th, Carter and Rosalynn Carter surpassed George H.W. Bush and Barbara Bush and now hold the record for the longest presidential marriage, 73 years and counting.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? His vice president, Walter Mondale, will turn 92 in January 2020, making Carter and Mondale the longest surviving presidential vice presidential team in American history. This month was also another milestone. Donald Trump reached his 1,000th day in office on the same day that Carter celebrated the longest presidential marriage, October 17th. As we celebrate President Carter's legacy this month, it's valuable to compare the 39th and 45th presidents. Carter was elected with a majority of the popular vote, while Trump lost the popular vote by 2.85 million. The worst popular vote loss for a winning president in American history. Carter has the longest marriage in presidential history. Trump has been married 3 times and divorced twice. Trump has a record of extramarital affairs, while the worst statement that can be made about Carter's marriage was his awkward statement in an interview with Playboy in 1976. He said he had, quote, lust in his heart, end quote.
Yeah, I remember
that.
As
far as he ever went. Carter's devout faith was a cornerstone of his presidency and his humanitarianism in the years following his presidency. Carter regularly leads services at the Baptist Church in Plains, Georgia. Meanwhile, Trump's pandering to the religious right is well documented, and he claims in an interview with CNN on July 18, 2015, that he has no need to pray or confess his sins since he believes he has never sinned. Trump's charitable work through the Trump Foundation is under investigation for misuse of funds. Carter won the Nobel Peace Prize for diplomacy, promotion of peace, and human rights advocacy. Trump has alienated our allies, undermined American diplomacy, and has ignored human rights concerns as he creates allies out of dictators. Carter has strong relations with Latin America. He negotiated the Panama Canal Treaty, which restored control of the canal to Panama in 2000. He also promoted human rights and held Chile, El Salvador, and Nicaragua accountable for their violations of such rights by suspending military and economic aid. Meanwhile, Trump has insulted people from Latin America, particularly those from Mexico and Central America, and received condemnation of their leaders. He embraced the right-wing government of Brazil. Carter achieved a major breakthrough in the Middle East with the Camp David Accords between Israel and Egypt. On the other hand, Trump's close association with Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Salman and his curtailment of American participation in the Iran nuclear agreement destabilized the region. Now Trump has now abandoned the Kurds in Syria, leading to immediate bloodshed. Carter diplomatically recognized the People's Republic of China and worked to strengthen trade between the two nations. Trump's trade war with China has led to ever-increasing tariffs that harm economic and diplomatic ties. According to environmental experts, Carter was the third best president for the environment behind only Theodore Roosevelt and Richard Nixon. In a 2012 survey reported in the New York Times, experts ranked Carter as the best one-term president for the environment, praising his development and use of alternative energy sources, including wind and solar. Carter tried to move away from coal, oil, and natural gas. Meanwhile, Trump has the worst record on the environment in American history, surpassing Ronald Reagan. Trump has encouraged the oil, coal, and natural gas industries and described global warming as a hoax. Carter promoted the creation of the Health and Human Services Department, Education Department, and the Energy Department, while Trump has undermined all three cabinet agencies and their missions. Jimmy and Rosalynn Carter have built housing for the poor through Habitat for Humanity for the past 25 years. Trump is a real estate developer who built resorts and hotels for the rich and powerful. Finally, Carter has become more respected and honored as time has passed, while each year more details of Donald Trump's corruption and lack of moral character. Carter will always be considered a better president by historians and political scientists. For the American public, Carter will always be considered a better man. That's my article.
Very good. Very good.
That's not bad. That's great. It really tells you the differences between them, but Jimmy Carter's a lot different than most. I think the only one even close to him is I can't think of one really. Obama's a good guy, but he works mostly behind the scenes to, you know, further a better democratic politic in this country by working on voting communities and the gerrymandering and everything. I know he's involved in that.
I want to point out is, if you look from Carter to now, which two presidents had no real scandals, nobody indicted or convicted in their time? Carter and Obama.
And Obama, yeah.
That Clinton,
yeah, very good.
It's not that good, and not the Republicans, but Carter and Obama, you know, they share that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Reagan didn't have, well, Iran Contra.
Oh, Reagan had lots of
hands. I was going to say, if you allow me to interject here real quick, we had the Iran Contra, and like I said, a family friend, Eugene Lovell, he's passed now. He represented, had his law degree. He was a school teacher, but also a family friend because my father was a school teacher. Eugene Lovell represented Norm Gardner. You may not recognize Norm Gardner's name, but basically he was the CIA agent that Ollie North reported into. Ollie North was out of the country when he landed into Reagan National. Somebody walked up to him, gave him a piece of paper with a phone number on it. It was a payphone. And basically it was Casey, who was head of the CIA at the time, and others. Basically, the deal was made because the Iran-Contra thing had come out. And this is Eugene Lovell's own words. He said, basically they wanted to get their story straight. And he goes, paused for a minute and said, got their lies together. And the promise was made to Ollie North that if he fell on the sword to protect Casey, Reagan, and all those others involved in the Iran-Contra, that he would never have to work another day in his life. Mm-hmm. Ollie North is a very wealthy man today.
Well, he's also very
crooked.
This
for a fact. I know
this for a fact.
And he's
very crooked, too, And he's involved with the NRA, of course.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. This is his payback. This was when he fell on the sword and took the blame for the Iran-Contra, protecting everybody else.
Yes.
He's making bunches of money now for the rest of his life.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true.
But I think he's an evil person when he comes down to it. Don't you think he is?
I wouldn't shake the man's hand. That's for damn sure.
Money's all that matters. Principles don't matter anymore. It's really disgusting,
That's right.
That's not true of all of them. And I want to say on the end shot here that I think that on the most part we can be pretty proud of the Democratic candidates we have running for presidency right now. I'm no fan of Joe Biden's, and I never have been. I remember Anita Hill and that questioning, and I remember the part he played in it. I think that Justice Thomas is a piece of dirt. I know that he was the senator from Delaware who was nothing but a corporate bagman in many instances for big money. However, he is a nice man, and I think he's a sincere man. I don't hold him as an evil man at all, but he's not what I would choose for leadership ever. Even if I had had the chance to vote for him in Delaware, I would have said, forget about it.
I
can shed a little more light on who Joe Biden is. Actually, I have a brother-in-law, married my Carol's oldest sister. His name is Craig. Oh, I'm sorry. Basically, because you had so much of the banking industry moving into Wilmington at the time, yes, he was representing his constituency. Yes, they did. He did become a bagman for them, but he was also very honorable with everything else. So, he was representing the business community.
Despite the Anita Hill thing, which I know
happens,
the black community in South Carolina looks like they're overwhelmingly for him. He has a lot of black support instead of Kamala Harris or Cory Booker, which I found astonishing.
Yep.
He does have a lot of support.
Well,
absolutely.
I gotta say something. That's because that's to trust the polling data that they're getting. I don't think all the polls are completely correct any more than I think that Biden's number one and Warren's number one and Bernie's so low in the polls. I think that there's a huge push me pull me going on, and this is just momentary stuff. And I'll tell you what. A lot of young black voters are going home to their parents and to their grandparents and saying, are you crazy? And this is why.
I want to mention it down to 1 minute. Just want to point it out.
Yes. I was just going to say, Ron, tell folks where they can find you.
Okay, theprogressiveprofessor.com, historynewsnetwork.org. Look under blogs, Ronald L. Fineman, and I'm also on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you again for having me on.
Oh, hey, Ron, thanks so much for being here. And I know you can't be with us for the next 2 weeks, but I hope you'll step back in. And how long that Jack is going to take to get back with us.
Yeah, well, I'll do my best. I enjoy being on the show all the time and getting to talk to both of you.
Well, thank you. Thank
Professor,
you so much for sharing with us, too, your articles. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm going to say, Professor, you and I go way back. You know what I feel about you and have nothing but the total respect for you. It's always a pleasure when you and I are talking and having conversations.
Yeah, have a good week,
well,
both of you, okay?
You too. And I will end as our friend Jack always does, and that is to remind everyone to keep pushing forward and to be positive and look for the good stuff out there. Thank
you. Absolutely. Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night.